It's a special New Year's edition. We'll talk about that. I'm John.
I'm Johnny.
And we're here for a year in review time to look back over 2019 as we head into 2020.
So many moments. I can't think of any. But
I can't. Yeah. I'm really worried that we won't have a lot to review. Like, it was kind of a blur.
It was a lot. A lot happened. Yeah. But, we're not going to. We're not going to get political.
You and I were talking about that at lunch today. Like literally.
There's no.
We could say this.
There's no good side.
Our president just got impeached.
Yeah.
And like literally you and I are probably not comfortable going into that conversation because that's, you said.
Well, and it's all everybody talks about. It's all they get on their social media feed is like these opinions on either side of it. Yeah. And so you're inundated with it. So it's one reason I don't talk about it in my show. When I do a comedy show, I don't do political jokes. Like, what's the point? They want a break from that.
Right, we're so politicized right now, and I think it's an important topic. And you and I do talk about it, would enjoy it, but probably not for this year. I mean, it would just consume the whole time.
Yeah,
you don't want to do that.
Yeah, it's fine.
I will say this, though. I'm not going to say anything politically. I will just say this: that this has been our reality now for 5 years.
Yeah,
that all we talk about in the news, like every news story, is about the president. And before he got elected, every news story was about him. And so I will just say that I can't think of a time in life where
you woke up every day and the president was in the back of your mind.
Yeah, he is the only news story. Like every news story that comes on, every comedian, you watch Fallon at night, you watch Kimmel, everybody, all their bits are about him. You turn on the news story, everything is in the context
of Saturday Night Live, yeah.
Yep, everything. And so it's like, it's amazing. The only thing I could think of was, and I'm not saying this, I'm not making a positive or a negative statement. I'm just speaking in terms of its volume or saturation in the social marketplace. I will just say McCarthyism in the 50s might be the closest thing because, I mean, there was a ton of obsession.
The communism scare and finger pointing.
Yeah,
all
everything was about McCarthy and everything was about, was always that story and who it affected
Which
next.
You were alive for that. You remember that.
Oh, my goodness. The 50s. What a time.
Man, they call
what a time to be alive.
John had to seek refuge when he was called the Red Menace.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So anyway, I would say I wouldn't mind there being other news stories that.
Well, Saturday Night Live will get a break this week because they're bringing back one of their own. Eddie Murphy is hosting Saturday Night Live this week. So it will have already happened probably when this airs.
Is he making a lot of movies anymore?
No, he's coming back to stand-up. He's agreed to do a stand-up return special, $70 million for Netflix.
I would have agreed to that, too.
Yeah, I told him I'd have done it for half that if they had found me.
Yeah, wow, what a steal. $70
million. Yeah.
Good night.
Yeah, nuts.
Netflix must be doing okay.
And what's funny is we're not even sure. I don't want to say we're not sure if he's funny anymore.
He hasn't done stand-up
we don't
so
know
long.
What his chops are going to be at this point because he even said when he was on Comedians in Cars getting coffee with Seinfeld, he said he regretted letting that muscle atrophy. He referred to it as an atrophy when he stopped doing stand-up for 30 years. And he was the biggest stand-up in the world, one of the biggest ever. And he just kind of was like, he reached the heights and he was like, I'll just do movies now. And then he mostly did kids' movies the last several years. And now it's like, I'm going to come back to stand-up. But what are his sensibilities going to be? A lot of his – that's what's interesting, too. Stand-up, we have cancel culture now. We have all this stuff. There's so many topics that he had. Like, if you watch Delirious, you can't get through it. It's so homophobic. It's so beyond the pale. Some of the words – I mean, he's just crazy. So those topics are off the table now.
Right.
And so it's interesting to see what he'll do. I have no doubt. I mean, Eddie Murphy is one of the funniest people that's ever lived. So I'd give him the benefit of the doubt. But I told him what I would have done. I would have done it pay-per-view. I wouldn't have done – where
that's
they could watch
what
it again.
You told him?
Yeah. That's what I was telling a friend of this. I said, you pay per view, he could have made $500 million. Like if it was a one time only pay here to watch this, $29 or whatever, everybody gets around in the house and you each pick kick
so
in.
So let me get this straight. Eddie Murphy found a way to make $70 million for one night of stand up. Yeah. And you.
I said he should have done
found
it.
A way to criticize that.
Here's what I would have done,
like,
Eddie.
Greed might have crept in here, John.
Yeah,
but he could have got half a billion. I mean, like, seriously?
Well,
Johnny, where's your contentment level? Let's talk about that.
Yeah, I'm pretty content, I guess.
When's your Netflix special coming out? I mean, I know they've been asking.
They've been
You're still negotiating the numbers.
People are clamoring for it.
So, seriously, though, when does your...
My dry bar.
Yes, your dry bar come out.
They're saying March.
Okay.
So, there's a whole... You know, they take three or four specials a weekend for the last you know, 2 years.
So you're in a queue.
So people in the queue. I'm in the queue.
Yeah, in the hopper. If you
yeah, will. And it's exciting. I was really happy with it.
Yeah.
So I mean,
have you seen the footage?
No.
Okay.
But I just felt like the shows.
You
went
saw
so,
the live footage as you did it.
Yeah, I just thought, well, these shows went so well that I'm assuming this will come out. Yeah. Like, you never know, but
yeah.
you can get a feel for when you did well or when you didn't do well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Anybody, and I've had some things where I was on the fence about. I was like, let's see what the footage looks like.
Anybody with a microphone can get a feel.
Nothing's ever as good as you remember it, though.
Yeah.
Nothing's like, oh, I destroyed. And you watch and you're like, ooh, that was just okay. But
yeah,
I felt good about it.
I'm usually okay with the audio of something if I thought. Sometimes I go back and listen to kind of critique my own sermon so I can keep getting better. You know, and I'll be like, if I watch it, I don't like it. But if I listen to it, I'm usually okay because I'll be thinking of just the content kind of thing. You know, of course, I don't know. That's interesting. But you have all the above. You have to deal with the content and the way you delivered it, what your expression was and all those things. And that happens for a
preacher.
I've
seen still photos from it, and I already don't like the shirt that I chose.
What was it?
It's a black shirt, but it had a pattern on it. But I don't like the way it fit. Like, it has a weird thing it was doing at the bottom.
Oh, man. I tried to tell you.
And I was like, oh, I should. Because I didn't want to wear a solid black shirt because I'd just done another taping for that Opry Network thing at Zany's. Which that'll be out in January, I'm hoping. And it's supposed to be in, like, 70 million homes. So that show, it's going to be called Stand Up Live from... Wait, Stand Up Nashville Live from Zany's.
Wow.
Stand Up Nashville. So
what's
that show...
What's the name of the network?
Circle.
Circle
Network. So when that comes out, I'm wearing this black dress shirt.
Yeah.
It's just a plain black dress shirt. And so I had that same shirt with me when I went to the drywall, and I was like, I don't wear this. Because then it looks like that's my comedy uniform.
Right.
He never wears that.
So instead of going out and buy another shirt, used your other black shirt.
But this one had a little pattern on it. But I had never worn it on stage, and I was like, oh, this will be cool. And then I saw this
simple
still
trip to Walmart. Could have solved
well,
so
Walmart,
much.
John.
Dude, Walmart's got pretty good clothes.
They do.
Now.
They're rolling back prices. It's fine. But the still, I was like, shirt, but I'm sure I'll get over it. It's fine.
I bet it's fine.
John.
I bet it's fine. With comedians, though, I mean, that's not, I mean, you always talk about this. You don't have to win them over with looks.
Right.
In fact, it might not be the best if you did.
Yeah, I think, I don't know. I think there's a lot of guy stand-up comics nowadays that are attractive, but I think a female attractive comic, it's almost like distracting to an audience because all the guys are thinking like, they're attracted to the woman maybe.
It's not that, and again, it's because guys are dumb.
We're dumb, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. We're not,
although I don't give guys an out. That's one of my big things when I talk about marriage, like the whole, well, men can't help it. Men are, like that's the that right there is,
I think if a female comic is attractive on stage and then she starts talking about her, like, she's being self-deprecating, it's hard for an audience to get on board with that because we have this thing in our culture that says, like, if a woman is attractive then she must not have any problems,
which is ridiculous,
right? Yeah. It's not true, but it's this barrier that has to be broken through. So if they're like, oh, my life is so whatever. I've even seen some female comics that are attractive say, it's hard being a hot girl. And that's their angle. And you're like, this is not going to work at all. This is not going to work.
Do you watch The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel?
Love it.
Yeah. So, I mean, not endorsing it per se.
Not a sponsor.
There's certainly some language.
I didn't know you. Do you like it?
Oh,
you watch it?
Yeah, I watch it.
You watching season three?
I'm in season three.
Here's
right
my
now.
Favorite thing about that show is they spend so much money on these background pieces. Like, for instance, she's touring with an artist now, Shai Baldwin, this character who's like an R&B soul artist, black artist, which is really interesting because it's segregationary. It's like we're coming out of the civil rights movement in this, you know, it's 1961, I guess.
I think it's really before the civil rights.
Yeah, it's right in the heart of it. And he's this, you know, and so he's got this band. But they had to really write songs for him.
And they're good.
And they're good.
And he can sing.
And they'll play like 3-minute chunks of these songs.
Yes.
Just as a part of the episode. And it's very immersive. And you just think, this is what makes this show so great. They're spending money on things that someone who had a show that wasn't as good would not think is important.
Yeah. No, exactly. Like, I just watched the episode where she was doing all the radio spots.
Yeah. It's so good.
And they make her go from studio to studio. She's getting paid and all kinds of funny things.
Right.
But they really, you would think, overdo it. Like, she does a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
But it makes you understand that... I think that they're really trying to help whatever the media was in that time, they're trying to make you feel like this is what it was like. Certainly going to Vegas and walking through the casinos and that life, but it's a little bit like Groundhog Day almost. Like, she stays in Vegas a long time in the show.
Yeah.
And you keep seeing her do the same show.
Yeah.
You know, even though she's telling different jokes and all. And that's one question I have for you, by the way, in a second. But you see that every night Shai Baldwin's band has to do this same thing, and you kind of see life on the road, that it's not all, you know, roses. And so, but I really like it. And I think that the cinematography, like, Laura doesn't notice things like that usually, but I'll be like, did you just watch that camera shot? I don't know how they just flew, if that was a drone or a jib or whatever, but like, she walked into this big Vegas ballroom,
yeah,
and the camera is with her, you think, and all of a sudden it goes into the air and makes like a 180 around the whole room. I guess it'd be a 360 technically if you went all the way around.
Yeah,
I was told there'd be no geometry, but. And I was like, oh my gosh, that was a brilliant, you know, camera shot that they just pulled off there. And every part of it was something historically, I don't know, culturally right for the time. Like, they're going to great lengths. And then the shots of all the cars on the Vegas Strip, I guess it's so CGI, good. A lot of it, because it goes as far as you could see, just like it was really there. Anyway, no, I love that. I want to know, though, the thing I think that might not be authentic for me. Now, you see her writing in her notebook and everything.
Right.
But she seemingly is just going off the cuff every night.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, she's just making up these award-winning bits.
Well, we talked last episode about characters who are Mary Sues.
Yeah.
And she's definitely not a Mary Sue because you see her fail and you see her make mistakes.
Yeah.
Really, I mean, she's, you know, sometimes she does the absolute wrong thing.
Yeah.
Even, you know, morally or whatever, like, she's made some mistakes. But that's one part of her character that's interesting, is she adapts very quickly to an audience. In this season, she does the Apollo, and she kind of thinks on her feet to adapt to that audience. And she actually makes a mistake in that episode. But she... Yeah, she seems to write a new 10 minutes.
Well, because they can't let her keep telling all of her old jokes every time. I mean, but that's
exactly what you did in that era. That's what's interesting, is that's exactly what you did
in that
era.
That's what I'm asking you. Do they do a different set every night? And were you on your ad-libbing like that?
Well, season two, they were in the Catskills, which I was so fascinated by, because I grew up hearing about that whole era of comedy where these Jewish families, it was like middle class, lower middle class to upper middle class. They would vacation. It was like a cheap place to go vacation in the Catskill Mountains outside of New York. And that's where all these dinner clubs were, and you would camp. And then they'd bring in these huge acts every night.
Yeah.
And you'd see these up-and-coming comedians, but you'd see, like, the guys. You know, you'd see Buddy Hackett. You'd see whoever. Henny Youngman, all those guys. And basically then you could work. I mean, from the things I've heard, I'm a huge comedy nerd, and you would hear people talk about Henny Youngman could work that whole 20-year period on 15 minutes of material.
Wow.
And then they would even steal each other's material. Just like, oh, we don't even know who wrote that joke. That's a Milton Berle joke, but we all do it. And it wasn't even a big deal.
Yeah.
It was just like, look, you got to eat. You're in the Catskills. Just do whatever. It's all about crowd pleasing. So, yeah, this idea that she gets up in front of a Vegas audience and just like, today I was out with my mother-in-law and here's something about her, and that it kills.
Yeah.
That's a little bit of a Mary Sue plot point.
Unless she was, I mean, again, yes, unless someone was really, we have seen like Michael Jr. or whatever, who can take questions from the crowd and can immediately make something funny out of it.
But there is definitely a polishing to be done. Now, sometimes a crowd will give you credit for having something off the cuff, and it almost doesn't, it's not like when you watch Whose Line Is It Anyway.
Right.
Wayne Brady makes a song up on the spot. Well, if you just heard that song and he had taken 6 months to put it out, you'd be like, that's just kind of average. But in the moment, it feels like this guy's a genius because he came up with it on the fly. So you do get a little bit of credit.
Yeah.
When I travel with Tim Hawkins, he'd have me go up in the middle. And then after about touring with him for a while, I'd do in clubs and things too. I told him one day on the bus, I said, you like going up first because you want to comment on the room first. So it's like this advantage. Because if you go up second, the person before you may have burned your premises, meaning if they talk about Facebook, if they talk about weight loss, if they talk about my wife's this and my wife's that, there's a difference between men and women. Then you get up and say it. You go, well, just like Tim said, I'm on Facebook too. Your joke is not going to hit his heart.
Yeah.
So he gets to know I'm hitting these topics first. And if I want to comment on the weird chandelier in the room,
yeah,
Johnny didn't go up before me and do that.
What you're saying is Tim Hawkins is a jerk.
He's a cheater.
Oh, my goodness.
Filthy
taking you
cheater.
Out on the road and just so he could do that to you.
No, but it is. It's interesting.
Tim, you have to come on the show and defend yourself.
He
That's
does
the
defend
only
his
way.
Honor. No, I could totally see how it's very savvy to do. It's sure. The, you know.
Well, and I always liked it when I was out with you guys. What I always liked is how much Tim wanted to share the stage with you.
Yeah.
He didn't want to have the whole act, you know, and then instead of just making you a cold open, because here's the deal. He was going to do, they were there to see him.
Yeah.
And so he was going to do well the moment he touched the mic. And so he, even though it might be hard.
He didn't need it. He didn't need anybody on the road with him. He just thought it made the show better.
Made the show better. And he loved to introduce you and always honored you and y'all come back and do the bit together, you know, at the end. So
yeah.
I always enjoyed that.
But there is advantages to walking out and being like, hey, that chandelier that's been in your church for 12 years that nobody ever mentions.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to mention that it looks like the Starship Enterprise. This laugh that you get from that is a different kind of visceral laugh.
Yeah.
It's like you saw something with a third eye that the audience has been seeing every day, every Sunday of their life.
Yeah.
And now you get to see it from your view, and it's a crazy laugh.
I often think about, like, and that's, you know, as we look at New Year's and New Year's resolutions and change, I'll often think about, like, the church. And I always say to people, because we spent a lot of time building this church, we spent, you know, more than 2 years building it ourselves. And during that time, we were meeting in a tent as a youth ministry. We were meeting also as a church in a wedding chapel.
Yeah.
Sometimes we would have picnics here in a big tent. We used the property kind of creatively. We before the building was done, and we even had electricity. You remember that we put up drywall in a room, but it was totally unfinished. And I put, you know, kerosene heaters and stuff in there, and
so we could kill children.
It was, you
with
know, like you do
propane fumes.
So, yeah, and. But the thing about it was the constant changing brought with it like a whole host of things that you wouldn't expect. It was very, everybody was okay with everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the expectations, it's not that they were low. It was like they were excited by this. And it was cold. It was hot. It was messy. And people would bring their friends. But there was something pure about it because we were here. You didn't have all the amenities. Take away the amenities, it was, and also it was moving towards something. That was the other thing, is we had a common goal. People were all working together. And I just remember, I've said this to the staff several times, like, I think one of the worst things that ever happened to us was moving into our building.
Yeah.
You know, all of a sudden,
it's like it's done.
Yeah. And we didn't know well enough, I think, back then to understand that you should have that feeling of we're all building something together, and it's related to the gospel and community. Like that's the idea. That's a God truth that was built into whatever project you do at work or whatever. There's something about teamwork. The reason is that's a principle of that I believe is inherited from creation, reflected by God. That when we work together, there is a shared energy to that, and when that shared energy is placed towards the things of God's kingdom, then it's exponential and it's also transformative. And so, like, that's what it should feel like. It should always feel like, no matter where you are, that we're all building something, a building. In fact, Paul says that we are being, or Peter, excuse me, that we are these living stones being built into this house for God. And all we think of is church buildings, but literally it means, you know, this dwelling place or this place where this interaction, this family and this.
That's not the analogy I thought you were going to make. I thought you were going to say that, like, Jesus came first and he commented on the room. Just like Tim Hawkins comments on
that. Is that where you thought I was going to go?
He was the one who looked at our weird chandelier in our life, our sin.
Oh, my goodness. And made a joke about, wait.
He said that the Pharisees were whitewashed tombs.
Like the Starship Enterprise.
He didn't say that. That would have been weird if he said
that. That was in the Greek.
That was in the Greek.
But just like that whole idea, I always think, though, my whole point of that was is about rooms changing.
Yeah.
Like, I'm in that same room every week now for years and years and years. You know, in fact, I would ruin it. I shouldn't say this. I'm going to say it. Like, I tell the staff all the time, and I'll get them kind of thinking about it and excited, but we just never pulled it off. Like, I want one Sunday, because we're in our room is more long than it is wide.
Yeah. Okay. Shotgun style.
Yeah. And I want to, when everyone leaves, not tell them.
Yeah.
And I want to pull all the carpet up. I want to finish polishing the concrete of the floor, and I want to tear the stage out, and I want to rebuild the stage where we're now horizontal instead of vertical, and take the whole room to this where the front and the back are closer, but it's wider, so everybody's closer together. And I want to just flip it. I used to do that in youth ministry, remember, all the time. If I thought they were, if they were bored or whatever, I would just make them all turn their chairs to the, I remember I used to do sermons like that. I would do four parts.
It's like Dead Poets Society. Stand on your desk.
Yeah.
Oh, turn, captain, my captain.
Everybody turn your chairs and face this wall, and I would go talk to them there. And I was, okay, then we turn around, we're facing the back wall. Like, you know, just, there's something about perspective, I think, that we get so into the same perspective, and a newness is good. So I think that's why everyone loves New Year's, Johnny, is they... They get to start thinking about
life. New year,
life.
New you, John.
Oh, my goodness.
Do you believe in resolutions? Do you make them?
I try to make them all year, but...
That's such a John Driver answer. I make them every day.
I don't...
To be a better person.
No, you know what? I do think that there's a... I think there's health in evaluation.
Yeah.
And I think that if New Year's is a time that you're willing to do that, then do it.
Give yourself a progress report.
Yeah. You need to look at... Our community groups are doing it right now, by the way.
Okay.
They're doing... you're in a community group. You'll have to fill out an online form.
Oh, boy.
That it's just about 12 questions about, hey, where are we? How is this happening? The things that I said I wanted, the things I'm going after. And I've told our group leaders, like, everybody be really, really honest. Like, I think the scores should not be very good. I mean, that's okay because there's no condemnation. It just says, hey, well, either I feel like that we're pursuing each other well or we're not.
Yeah.
Let's at least call it what it is and not be mad about it or be condemned about it, but so we can grow. But if you never stop and look at where you are, if you never get on the scale, Johnny, you'll never know how much weight you lost. If you never get a gym membership, Johnny, then you'll never exercise in those machines legally. I mean, you can get in there,
I guess. What's the old Seinfeld bit about, like, are people stealing exercise? What if they chase you? It makes it worse. That's aerobic. Like, if they chase you away from the gym. He's exercising more now.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, yeah, but I mean, how many people, I used to get on a scale every day, but I wasn't doing anything with the information. It's like, yep, I'm a fat piece of garbage.
It's still happening.
I'm going to have some cake. This is depressing. Yeah.
Are you away every day kind of guy still?
Oh, yeah.
I shouldn't.
They say it's bad. It's bad to do.
I don't do it right now. I kind of know where I am in
the holidays.
Range. I just finished a first draft of a manuscript.
Oh, so you're doing the whole, your comfort food?
No, but I've been out of my exercise game a little bit. And there was no way, like, okay, on Monday.
But how often do you normally exercise?
Monday, I called my boss, or Sunday, and I said, look, man, I'm on it. I got to have this by Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, all right, take the day. And I went to Lassiter's Coffee Shop, which is now MJ Cafe.
Not a sponsor.
And I sat in my, I have a seat there because it helps me not get writer's shoulder because I don't have my arms up. I can sit in this chair.
Yeah.
I went there at 8 o'clock.
What do you do if somebody's in your seat?
They never are. That's why I go there.
It's a God
I have
thing.
A chair at Panera.
Providence.
Yeah, I mean, I think God knows. But I go to Panera, and somebody's in that chair sometimes, so I don't always go there. Plus, I'm going to see a bunch of people. They're going to walk by me at Panera that I know.
Yeah.
And I go to the Starbucks on Lebanon Road.
Yeah.
I have one there. Sometimes people are there, and I just kind of wait them out. But this one's almost always a sure thing, and I'll be there. But I literally sat in that chair. I ate breakfast. I ordered breakfast there. Ate, drank coffee, and I wrote, and I ordered lunch and stayed there. And I wrote from 8 o'clock in the morning till 6 o'clock at night. It was a 10-hour writing day for me. And the deal is, that's why I'm not on the scale. Like, I know I didn't run that day. I didn't, and I'm exhausted mentally.
Yeah, you had a gallon of macchiato.
Yeah. I stayed in the okay place. I'm having a few little things at night, you know, some, but it is the holidays and that's okay. Like, look, keto and low carb, all that works for me. I don't work for it, Johnny. So I'm just going to do I'm going to do what I want to do, but I'm also going to use this tool to help me. So, but that being said, I'm going to have to get on there eventually. I don't think I've ballooned up. I can usually tell that, but
you almost got dessert today. If I'd said, I'll share something with you, we would have gotten it.
It would have happened. My friend Matt, we were there at Longhorn, and literally these waitresses talked us into the biggest dessert they have.
Oh,
and I'm a keto guy.
Oh, I've seen that one. Isn't it like 2,000 calories?
Oh my gosh, yeah. It was like two huge pieces of cake on this really long plate with ice like ice cream piled up on each side, so you both eat off the same plate like a bowl of slop. Like, and it was amazing.
How do you feel about sharing desserts with another guy across the table?
Doesn't
bother you at all?
No.
I mean, either.
Man, listen.
Look.
I'm so far past.
At that point, it's about the food. You're just like, I don't care what anybody says.
What are they? Listen, no, man.
You share the same spoon too, right?
Absolutely. Here, Johnny, try this. I hold it and put it in your mouth. No, I don't do that. But no, I'm okay with that.
If you get your own dessert, it's a problem. They're too big. You know what I'm saying? Because
this one
I don't want to look weird because my only other friend I have that gets dessert all the time is my buddy Marty.
Only other, as if I'm the other one?
Yeah. You get desserts.
I don't ever order dessert.
We've got dessert.
You?
We've got dessert together before.
When's the last time I ordered dessert?
I'm just saying it's. We've gotten dessert.
You are lumping me in with all of your dessert friends, and you can't even think of the last time. I want data, or I don't want you to say it, Johnny. That's how it works.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to impugn your character.
I do love dessert. Continue, please.
It is good. But yeah, but if you have to get past the whole like I don't want to share because this is my guy friend with me, because if you get your own dessert, it's 2,500 empty calories just going into your gullet.
Yeah.
So you got to just suck it up and be like,
what
I'm going to have
a few gullet, by the way. Like, does your doctor go,
hey, we have gullets?
Let's check out your gullet next.
Sounds like a pelican, like what a pelican has.
Sounds like something a bird would have, like a bird of prey or a waterfowl.
It's like an Old West thing. Put this in your gullet. It gives you like an old,
now
like 80-year-old bottle of whiskey. Put this in your gullet. Liquid,
that is an old,
liquid courage.
And that is an old whiskey.
Right, and this is in the 1800s, too. So
it was made in 1720.
It's when they first came up with whiskey. We don't even know if it's...
An 80-year-old bottle of whiskey.
I don't know.
In a man's gullet. Wow.
That's what killed my dad. That's what killed Dad. He wasn't ready.
Oh, my goodness. I did not order the dessert, but I do weigh. And I do like to kind of keep tabs on it. I think that's healthy, but but you're right. You can become a slave to the scale.
Or the number is like, oh, I'm doing all right. You can, or if you have a bad, like, I may as well just, like, if you're up 2 pounds, you're like, I may as well just have these candied pecans.
That's the pattern with me and Laura. Like, well, we've already blown this week anyway. Like, that's the pattern we broke out of this year a lot.
Yeah.
Christmas is harder. You know, we're both, she's got a big project at work she's working on. And I told you at lunch, like, so I've written 4 books this year. And worked more at church than I've ever worked. Like, it's been a big year where God, I think, let me stay healthy, you know, in a lot of ways. And I'm very grateful. I've been telling him as I evaluate the year, I'm like, you know, I asked for this because you give me a fruitful time where I can kind of be healthy physically. And then a lot of good things happen at church. And then I was able to write a lot. But at the end of every one, the end of the first draft, it's just, it just sucks.
Like, it's the desert.
There's no way around it. Like, you just got to... Because it's not like you can just say, oh, I've worked the allotted number of hours. You have to work till it's done. And I almost always, like this one I'm working on now, which is amazing, but it has a lot of contributors. And so that contributor list keeps growing and growing and growing. And so I have to write all the things I interview them for. And it's grown to over half the size of the rest of the book that I've already written, which was already in the contract's range of word count, which means I've basically written another half a book. You know, a lot above, but you can't stop. You can't go, well, sorry, I said we'd do 55,000 words, you know.
I feel like I have a lot of things in my folders in my Evernote that are like song ideas, joke ideas that I, because I'm very, to me, writing jokes still feels kind of like magic to me. So if it doesn't come right away, I'm not a grinded out person usually.
Right.
And I used to ask Tim that. I'd be like, some of these songs, because he's written so many songs. It's like, did some of these come right away and some of them you had to just like work on forever? And he was like, yes. It made me feel relieved because you just assume there's that creative person out there that's just like, oh, I just open up the window and ideas float into my head and I just monetize them. So it was good to hear somebody that's done a lot of work go, no, sometimes you have to just put your nose down and go. Like, there's an old quote that says that. It says, sometimes it's not enough to do your best. You must do what is required.
Yeah, that's good.
I like that.
I'm actually, when I say jealous in a light way. When I'm jealous of your mind, it's because you still kind of see things and you're not a – you do work really hard and grind it out, especially on the road. My gosh, you're on the road more than anybody I know. But like when it comes to creativity, you have instantaneous recognition of what's good and what's not good enough yet.
Yeah, but I think it makes me too careful.
But see, but I would long for that because there's times – because I'm more of a – I'm going to throw out 50 things and I'm going to try them all.
Okay.
And I'll find out whether or not it worked. And you're more like, no, I knew already which ones worked and didn't.
But I'm telling you, I was riding with a buddy of mine the other day, two buddies, and we were talking about ideas that were like half finished, just see if we could punch each other's ideas up. And I said a couple things and they were like, no, that's good. And then my comedian friend who's been doing comedy for over 20 years, he goes, I feel like you only bring an idea to us if you are 3/4 of the way sure that it's going to be good. And I would love to hear you bring something that's just like...
You have no confidence in.
Yeah, because I think there's a lot of ideas you're not getting on stage because they're not 3/4 done yet. And it was really, it was a good rebuke. that I needed.
Yeah, it's almost like you're having trouble being vulnerable even with the people who would help you make it better.
Right.
Yeah.
And I was like, you're right.
Wow.
And I needed to hear that. And I've tried to start like adjusting the way that I think about it, just like, because people always say, throw out any ideas. There's no bad ideas. But I feel like I'm terrified of that.
Oh, yeah.
There are bad ideas.
There are. Well, I always say there's no.
Sometimes you have to throw out bad ideas to get to the good. There's a germ of an idea, too, that's good.
Oh, one of my jokes is there's no dumb ideas, only dumb people.
That's true. That's a good
guys,
point.
Listen, y'all ask all the questions. There's no bad questions. Yeah. Just, you know. But that's true of everything in life. I mean, I think that when I'm in a meeting and it's idea time.
Yeah.
I remember there was a meeting I went to. Who was that with? You would know. Oh, I could just say it. It's okay. The book came out and everything. I remember I went to the Tim Hawkins marketing meeting.
Yeah.
We finished the book. Everybody was really pleased with it. And I went down there with my agent. And we were in Dallas. And it was kind of a big deal because it was like the brain trust.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was management and it was everybody. You know all that team around the table. And they are, man, sharp.
It's like, intimidating.
Yeah. And we were in their big offices and around the table and flew in. Met my agent. We drove in together, and he's kind of a big deal in the industry too, and someone that I honestly want to impress. I mean, like he's been like a in writing and even in life. Like we love each other. Like we hug each other, try we see each other, and he's you know kind of like a grandfather figure.
Share
you know,
desserts.
It's, we would share dessert. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, good.
And so you know I don't want to look you know as much as I people pleasing and approval of man and all those things is probably no doubt that's an issue for me that I think I'm a lot healthier in. But you get in there and you've already written it and you realize, look, I'm really not a marketing guy.
Yeah.
But I'm also that guy who thinks of 1,000 things that might seem right, you know, and I can sound like I know what I'm talking about. And in my younger days, I would have just been like, woo, and just kind of firing ideas.
Yeah.
But like you said, since I don't have what you have, that natural filter to go, yeah, all of those didn't probably sound good to people who do this professionally.
Mm-hmm.
You just broke 8 cardinal rules of marketing or publicity. That you know, so I'm a little more likely these days to try to stay in my lane. Like, but I walked away from that big meeting realizing I really said nothing,
mm-hmm.
and I think I disappointed some of the people. Like,
yeah, you stayed too silent,
too safe because they were throwing out great ideas. We had Thomas Nelson's marketing team there, and so I'm kind of like, and this is sort of I know you're going to roll your eyes, everybody, but the Enneagram 6 person. I do. I trust in systems and people who are smarter than me. I need committees.
Yeah.
Not like real committees, but I trust this. I want other people at the table who are looking at this at an angle that I'm not good at. I know what I'm good at. I'll bring that.
Yeah.
You know, and in my mind, I'd already done that. Look, I'm going to help him get this done. That's going to be my job. And I'm going to stay on this till it's done. I'm going to manage this project. And I'm going to tell you what I think works that's funny in a prose way for me. I'm going to work with the editors so that you don't have to. You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? I'm going to make sure. I mean, I spent hours on the phone with his management, making sure all the bits were tight and all those things in the book. Great. You know, I even chime in on cover design and all those kinds of things. When you get to marketing, you know, I'm like, dude, put him on Fallon. Like, that's my number. I'm going to just come out of the gate and I'm going to swing for the fences. Like,
right.
I think it's hilarious. I think he should be on Fallon. I think he should be on everything you can find, you know. And but if I feel like I sound like
that's naive or whatever.
Yeah, like, I don't know. Yeah. Oh, that doesn't just happen. You know,
kind of thing.
But I'm always like the kind of guy, I have a publicist and I always say, look, let's swing for the fences. Who can you shoot this to? I know it may not happen,
uh-huh.
but I'm just that kind of guy. I'd rather take those chances. But
yeah.
I don't want to show that whole hand in front of other people who do right. this professionally. You know?
Well, it was a good note for me. And that's something, if I had a resolution, I think about that a lot now. And I think like, I need to, because I don't want to die with my song still in me, you know, that whole Henry David Thoreau thing of like most men lead quiet lives of desperation. They die with their song still in them. Like there's a lot of things I want to make while I can still make things. So when you have this thing of like, but what if it's not great? Like you're going to make some good things and some awful things, but you have to be willing to keep making things. And so I think I'm trying to get these half finished ideas out of my head while I still can. Even if they take a little bit of grinding on and like, I got to polish them on the lathe there, get them in the, I'm not using technology,
wow,
the
yeah.
terminology, right. You got to get out your belt sander, if you will. And
but these deck
get
spikes,
the barnacles and the
Spanish galleon.
I don't know what's going on.
You know, it was funny. My confidence in your brain is so off the chart. Like I just, in my mind, I think there's put this way. there's not an idea, and I might get some of your really lower ideas because, again, you're not pitching to a comedian.
Yeah, that's true. I probably do throw some things out to you.
You'll just say something that you were just thinking about.
Yeah.
You know? It wasn't a pitch. And none of them are unfunny to me.
Yeah.
Like, they're all funny to me. They're all like, oh, yeah, do that.
This is why we share desserts, John.
It's like, you know, I would think.
You're my support system.
Oh, do that. Develop that. You know, there's not one thing you ever said that I went, unless it was on an edge of something. That's often what you
bring. I think even in the early days of me starting to do stand-up, I remember telling you, Van, I remember I emailed you one time because I was doing something. It was like a contest or something. And I said, I feel like you believe in me more than I do myself. I really did.
Yeah.
You know? And so it means a lot. You need people like that around you, for sure.
I'm not trying to be a yes man.
No.
I would tell you.
Right.
It just happens to always be great. I mean, seriously.
John, come on. But that's the thing. That's what I want to do. So my resolution is that I want to. But honestly, when people ask me what my resolution, I want to do be the guy that says my resolutions are really like pretentious. Like, be like, I just think I want to take more time for me this year. Like, people always say they want to give more.
Yeah.
They want to be more present in their marriage or whatever. Like, yeah. I need to really focus on myself more in 2020.
Yeah.
Just to see people's face go, oh, really?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you the way to say that, because that probably needs to happen, but you're saying it wrong. Because, yes, people do say that. What you need to say is this. This would be the way to say that, right?
I've been giving a lot. I need to take. Is there a way to?
Like, yeah, you sound very pretentious, and you sound like that. That what you mean, and probably what you need. If you do mean that, then don't.
Yeah, I don't mean that.
What you're probably trying to say is I need to do more work on myself. This year. I need to do some more work.
It's Johnny time.
To help myself become a person that's better for others. But knowing myself will help with that.
Do the work.
Do some work. Yeah, that sounds pretentious too if you're not careful. You say do the work.
Do the emotional work that's needed.
And by doing that, I'm going to ask other people to come in so I can serve them better.
Okay.
How about that?
That sounds better.
So you come in. I'm going to let you. If I'm going to do the work, I can't do it alone. That means I'm going to invite other people to really look and I'm going to be vulnerable enough. So, by the way, speaking of, I'm going to be doing some work this year on myself. I am going to be going through 9 months of recovery.
Okay.
I'm going into the regeneration program that starts January 29th.
Yeah.
And it is intense. So, like, it's going to be I'm really excited. I was praying about this morning. I'm excited, and I'm also like, oh, man. Like, I'm so past in my younger days, I would have thought, oh, there's nothing to uncover, you know. Like,
yeah.
But, and I'm pretty self-aware, I think, and I've already been in quote-unquote recovery, I think, spiritually. And
this is something the church does.
Yeah, they did a year of pilot, and so this year, this one is still not open to the public, per se, but it is open to the entire church now.
All right.
So we've had about 30 that have gone through who, man, it's just, and I have a lot of friends in that. It's just been completely, here's the deal, recovery done right, in Christian circle or whatever, I can't speak for other, you know, for none. I could just say that it's not, it's just a tool. I preached on this the other day if you were there. You probably weren't because I was preaching. But
that's hateful.
Yeah.
I feel like we need to uncover that.
Yeah. So then part one, John's bitterness towards Johnny. Whether it's the Enneagram or whether it's Regen or whether it's Celebrate Recovery or whether it's Alcoholics Anonymous, whether it's a book, whether it's, you know, a program, an exercise program, all of those things are tools. Like they're not – and some people like freak out as if it's the thing, you know.
Yeah.
But they're all tools that you use or don't use. I mean, a hammer is not good or bad. It's what you do with it, you know, that matters. And you can do damage with it and you can do good with it. So But for regeneration in particular, what we think of is like this is actually what should all believers in community should be doing, this exact process. This is just a fast track for those who say, I'm desperate to say now. I want to go now.
Yeah.
So I want to spend every day doing 30 minutes of journaling, really intensive in these questions.
Journaling. Wow. Okay.
Well, it's not all journaling, but it requires a lot of writing. So there's it's a program that's been around for years and years out of Dallas. And so they have pilots and other now parts of it, people running it all over the country. And it's a little bit like Celebrate Recovery, but it's a little more spiritual community based. I just have a lot of friends. I'm actually a mentor to a couple people in the program, which is like a sponsor, you'd say, in other recovery circles. But it's a lot of scripture and it's a lot of, I mean, you make amends, it's 12 steps. It's a 12-step program.
I've noticed no one's come to me to make amends, and it bothers me a little bit.
Really?
When I know people are in And I'm like, I'm waiting on that apology.
Wow.
So maybe that's my issue.
He's calling you out.
Whoever it is, I need to hear the words.
Why is no one making amends with me?
Maybe they're not on that step yet, but I just need to hear the words.
I don't think anyone's made amends with me. And I know I've made some people mad. There's no doubt. So,
well, it'll be fine. I was raised to push your feelings down.
Right.
And it's worked fine so far.
Oh, yeah. You're doing great.
No, I think that's what comedy has given me. I think it's one of the reasons I don't feel angst like I did in my late 20s, early 30s, is because I do have this release valve for a lot of what bugs me or what bugs me about myself.
Yeah.
Now, it's not perfect because then you monetize it and ruin it.
Right.
You know, anytime you monetize something that's your feelings,
it does something to
it. It does something to it that makes it not fun anymore or not useful necessarily.
It just becomes, it can remain pure, but you got to be more intentional about it because it's going to lose something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I do think that there is something to the fact of, like, I'm always challenging my own viewpoints because it's just way funnier
right.
to do that.
Well, you're a humble comic. Some comics stand up and everything they do is a rant because they know everything.
Yeah.
And you don't do that. Yours is a rant against yourself.
I guess, yeah.
Like, it's a lot of, I thought this, and this is why I'm stupid.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
I'm stupid.
And that's why it's funny. Which I think there's a humility. That's interesting to me. So, like, your comedy is like therapy for yourself.
Man, I get. I mean, I hate when comics say that because it's like, what sometimes comics mean is like, this is my therapy, so look out because I'm getting ready to, all my issues with my mom
right.
growing up, you're getting ready to vent on an audience that's like unsuspecting.
Yeah.
I don't think it's that, but I do think there's something to, like, there's, for instance, pain from my childhood, embarrassing moments, feeling out of place.
Yeah.
That is now gold to me. If I'd had a normal upbringing where I just was well-adjusted and felt like, in other words, if I felt well-adjusted in school and that I always felt in place and I was a popular kid, those aren't the kind of people that go on to become comedians.
Right.
Or even authors, really. Honestly, if you're drawing from that pain. And what I'm finding is those are the stories that people relate to.
Yeah.
You see the aha moments. You see the eyes light up like, I thought I was only one. That's the stuff that I would have spent my whole childhood and even my 20s hiding from people.
Yeah.
I don't want you to know about this moment. I don't want you to know that I had a mullet haircut and a purple suit and that I was homeschooled and had a homeschool prom where I went with my brother. It was like a bunch of other homeschoolers. Like, what a terrible, weird. But that's the kind of thing you would tell on stage because it's weird.
Yeah.
Like, why do you want to hear the same dumb story from somebody that had a normal? You want to hear the weird.
Well,
I want to draw you into my world. Yeah.
It gives people a chance for their weirdness to not be the only one.
And plus, I had a glorious mullet. It wasn't just like an average mullet.
Oh, my gosh.
It was flowing.
That was
and I conditioned it every day.
Did you really?
It was shiny.
Did you put any other product in it besides that?
There was some Consort for men.
Consort. You're a consort.
I couldn't be out there with, Aquanet. Okay. I'm not I'm
what
a masculine.
What would Zeke Averici say about
Consort
that?
Consort hairspray, I don't know if they still make it, but it smelled like beer. Like, you could smell, it had a weird smell to it.
I mean, it just, maybe they were confusing their alcohols.
I don't know, but it did not smell good.
Wow.
But it was a manly hairspray.
You still sprayed it into your mullet. I've lost it. You
what?
Said it was going to happen. We're just going to have one day.
We're just running out of things to talk about. We've reached the end of it.
No, you were saying that, and
I was talking about vulnerability and connection, and like how the thing you draw from your pain.
I was thinking when I know I've talked about marriage before, and when I speak to just a group of guys, I've done talks on sexual expectations.
Uh huh.
And like gotten really
sexpectations.
I did call it that actually. That was the name of my session was sexpectations.
Great sexpectations.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. It's really, really punny.
No, it's good.
But
it's catchy.
The deal was, I just got very real about, I think, how men enter into marriage in certain circles, but I think all men. And there's this expectation that feels like a broken promise,
mm-hmm.
Like when you're dating and say, if you're in a situation where you're struggling with purity and it just feels like that the woman is going to be your wife is just can't keep her hands off of you and you can't keep your hands off of her. And there's this like unspoken promise that it's, or sometimes spoken,
mm-hmm.
like you just wait till we get married. It's going to be, and then when you're in a month or two and you realize that actually she can go a day without that. even though that's how it was in dating. And it, and it's a real like sense of betrayal, which makes no sense. It's a very, it's a, it makes sense.
Right.
Because it's not cognitive, you know, it's not all logical. There's an emotional and even an emotional maturity issue to it. And I'll share on those things. And dude, the guys would line up afterwards, and to your point of like, I thought I was the only one who ever felt that.
Yeah.
Because it was shameful for them. Didn't know when do guys ever talk about that kind of stuff, you know. But to say, I think guys, pretty much everybody has probably experienced some version of that.
Yeah.
It may be different for you. But there's something, I think, I mean, I think that's what community and the gospel always does, is it says, hey, you're not alone in this. In fact, and that's what's shocking. The people who have come out of this program already, a lot of things they said was, within week three, when I found out there were other people in this circle who had that problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you know everybody has those problems, but you really live emotionally as if they don't.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something about when I can sense that I'm not alone in it. Number one, it removes a lot of the stigma of it. Because I just think everything, it's kind of like the hyenas and the wildebeests. I mean, you want to isolate. If you can get someone away from the pack or the herd or wherever they run where they're safe, and you can get them to feel that they're alone and that they're the only one, that no one's watching out for them, and that they were dumb to get there, they went the wrong way, no one else has ever gone this way, then, I mean, you're a target and emotionally. So, I mean, I just, to me, I think that maybe that's what, I do know it's what your comedy does. I think people see that and they go, okay, this guy can laugh at himself. I have this freedom for a moment, you know.
I hope so. That's what you hope. And that's the thing, too, about, like, community, like you said, that Instagram varnish and sheen on everyone's life moments is disorienting to us, because we know, for us, like you've told the story before about the family, your family photo, where you basically had to, like, it took you 2 hours to get this one shot, and you still had to, like, Photoshop it, basically, to get it right. You know that about yourself, but you still have this weird image. Like, other people, though, they have the perfect, here's them on a ski retreat.
Yeah.
They're having the, even though you know it's not true, it's, like, disorienting. It's almost like driving down the road looking at your iPad. Your body feels nauseous because your body knows that you're moving, but your eyes think you're standing still. It's, like, it's disorienting to our bodies.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's going on with social media. We see these snippets of people's highlight reels, and it instead of it making us feel, oh, what a wonderful thing, we immediately begin to think, like, they have a different life than me.
Yeah.
They're not dealing with the same problems, and it's unsettling.
Well, you know, I don't talk about the Ten Commandments very much, but I thought the other day about coveting being a very, being an interesting located commandment, located. It's the last one, which in theory, either the first thing or the last thing is usually the most important.
Yeah.
So obviously the first one is very much about loving God and all that. But interesting to me that God would really focus on that to round it out. Because you would think, don't murder people, guys. Above all else, don't kill somebody else. You know what I'm saying? Or perhaps don't lie, because that's this, you know, really sin against the principles of honesty and integrity. But like that he really focused, it's kind of out of the blue. Lying, stealing, murder, okay. I mean,
right.
Almost every culture, whether they are God-fearing, not God-fearing, atheistic, would say, we're going to have to put some rules down about these things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't lie in court, you know, or whatever, to a judge. We have to have some truth, or we can't run society, because how do we know what happened if we can't believe anybody? You know? So even if it's not a moral thing, it's going to have a litigious, you know, type way. But the fact that God threw in there, hey, listen, when you look at your neighbor, don't long for their life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, don't long for their wife, don't long for their stuff, like, live yours. Like, and the fact that he made that, you know, for the Israelites, a commandment, I think just speaks to the problem that, yes, you're right, my gosh, we're handing now in our devices, and I'm not anti-device or anti-social media, as I have to always precursor and say, but it really is, like, we're flooded with other people's lives, and so it's just interesting to me that I think that's been a human problem from the get-go.
Yeah.
And that it's no wonder that I struggle the most. I mean, man, the pastoral coveting is unbelievable. I mean, I felt it today. Like, there were some things I said to God today that are very, very honest, you know, that I just felt like I had to just say. And they had to do with, you know, I said that. Man, I see this guy, and he has my job, and it's like everything's easy. Like, you know. And I'll tell you the example later of what it was. I can't even get this simple thing, like the most simplest of tasks done as a pastor. I feel like I can't get done sometimes, you know. And so why is it so hard? But it the angst comes from comparison almost every time. If I didn't have that person to compare to.
And then somebody's comparing themselves to you.
Oh, and that,
without
and that,
a doubt.
And it jars you every time you find that out. Somebody goes, oh, I thought that you had it. And you're like, what?
Yeah.
No. I mean, it's a, yeah. So, I mean, you know, as we look in a year in review, I mean, we look back and say, lots of stuff happened in the culture, lots of stuff happened in life. And I think one thing that I did learn over the year, I haven't stopped it yet, but we have talked about this topic a lot. If I could take away one thing, is I really want to enter 2020 not comparing myself to others as much as I can help it. Certainly not longing for what they have more than what I have. It's okay to say, it's okay to want growth or to want to advance.
Yeah, to me, it's almost like golf. Like, you're not, if you get to where you're playing against the other golfers, you've already lost.
Yeah.
You're playing against the course. So meaning in the course in your life is your own potential.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to get the most out of my own potential that I can.
Yeah.
Which that can be frustrating too. Because you're comparing yourself in essence with some perfect ideal of yourself. So that can be destructive too.
Yeah.
But I do think it's healthy to say, I'm just going to play the course and not worry about who's on the leaderboard. Because I'm never on the leaderboard, John, when I play golf.
No.
I'm in the bushes looking for my ball.
Yeah.
Spiritual.
And that's good. I mean, yeah, play it. I was thinking about Tennessee basketball lost to Cincinnati the other night, and I was thinking about they were down. And I'm thinking a Tennessee basketball coach used to say, no matter what the score is, we always come out and play like we're down by 10 in the second half. That he conditioned the team. I want you to take the court, and no matter what, do not look at the scoreboard. You're down by 10.
Yeah.
So you're going to, you know, how are you going to play if you're down by 10, you know? So there's just such a way to
build urgency.
Yeah. Like go give it your best. Cause I mean, the worst thing to have is a lead in sports, the worst thing, unless you're one of those perennial teams.
If I'm playing sports, I probably am down by 10. So I need something better. I need 20.
Yeah. You're right. Your El Guapo was the real,
it was the actual El Guapo.
Yeah.
Well,
listener, and maybe you have an El Guapo out there.
Yeah.
Maybe
your El Guapo is New Year's resolutions.
Maybe
you're afraid.
Yeah, you look back at 2019 and think, man, it was a tough year.
Be bold in 2020, you guys. Go out there. Chase your dreams.
Yeah, it's a decade change.
It's the roaring 20s are back.
We're heading into a new roaring 20s. Mm. A lot of bad things happened in the 20s, by the way.
That's true. There was a lot of stock market crash.
And,
didn't people throw themselves out windows? Or was that, really happened?
Did
we re-vetted that?
They were still in prohibition, too, so people were dying from poisoning from, like, bathtub gin.
Don't make bathtub gin, guys.
Although, guys,
there's regular gin available.
Right. You can just go buy it. You do need to go watch the Ken Burns Prohibition
documentary. Need to watch that.
I'm telling you, it is one of the most fascinating pieces of, what would you call that? That's a documentary.
I don't know.
It's art, though. The photos and the videos are amazing. So
I hear he uses that Ken Burns effect on a lot of the photos. He just calls it the me effect.
That's right. So, hey, guys, we are heading into a new year, and it's been fun. It's been fun having these episodes. Johnny, we've done one every week in 2019.
But that's a resolution we've kept.
Yep.
We didn't really make a resolution.
We did, actually.
Did we?
We decided.
You made it.
Well, you had to be on board with me. But we decided that we needed to be consistent because this was important enough and we really enjoyed it. And so we wanted to be consistent. So we did that. And we over doubled our downloads this year. So thank you.
Download doubled.
And the download doubled.
And we're going to have more guests. That's one of our resolutions for next year, is we're going to have more guests on the show.
See, you went and said it. Now we got to do it.
We have to do it because
Stopped promising things that we couldn't do. We really tried to do that. So maybe, but yes, we are.
We're going to take more me time.
If we have four guests, it'll be more than this last year.
Yes.
So, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Yeah. So we'll set our standards. No, we would like to have more guests. We also are probably going to do more of the live stream thing. Maybe try that every 4 to 6 episodes or so.
Yeah.
And let you guys have interactive parts of that. That was fun. It was fun this year. What was your favorite show, Johnny? Do you have a favorite show?
John, they run together.
Yeah, they really
We covered so much ground.
Johnny thinks we're going to run out of stuff to talk about. We both kind of talk for a living. I don't see it happening.
That's fine. So, well, people keep listening, though. I hope they do.
That'll be the key. Right now, they are, or at least their phones are auto-downloading.
Yeah,
so
that's fine, too.
Absolutely. And when you subscribe, that helps. Because we would love to see growth again, because we want to reach more people with this fun conversation. So make sure you tell your friends about it. Maybe you give them a New Year's resolution that they should listen and talk about that in 2020. And they should go back and listen to the whole catalog. What a great thing. That would be a gift, if you will, for the new year for your friends.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And it's free.
It is free.
So you get that, yeah. Hey, look what I got you.
If you don't want it to be free, though, yeah. You'd like to help out a little
Patreon.
Bit, go to Patreon. And what, Johnny, what's 10 or 20 bucks a month going to do to change, you know?
For the cost of five cups of coffee.
You. So, yeah. Hey, go check us out on Patreon. Share it. Follow Johnny. Follow me. And we're looking forward to hopefully more new and exciting things in the next year. But happy new year to you guys. We'll see you next time. We'll talk about that.
The love of God is immeasurable. It's unchanging. It's indescribable. Because God loves you so much, you can sleep through the night in peace. With Abide Bible Sleep Meditation, you can fall asleep fast with relaxing sleep stories based on Scripture. To start listening now, go to lifeaudio.com or search your favorite podcast app for Abide Bible Sleep Meditation. You can also download the Abide app for more biblical meditations at abide.com.